New. This is the Relevant Podcast. It's episode 1037, and it's a Relevant Podcast. Here in Orlando, I'm your host, Cameron Strength, and joining me from Loverland, Virginia, is Jesse Carey.
Hello, hello.
From Nashville, Tennessee, artist, producer, mogul, Derek Miner.
What's happening?
And joining us today, Jamie is out. So joining us today, our very own Downtown Emily Brown. I believe today you're in Houston. Is that right?
Yes, I am. Hey, y'all.
Did you already get kicked out of Nashville?
I did. They said it's been too long. It's like a week and a half. You've reached your max.
They deported you from a city.
Yeah. I saw a drunk on a pedal tavern. I was like, damn.
Yeah, I thought that was the initiation. And then apparently you get booted.
She over Nashville, yeah. Nashville. She went too
deep. No, my best friend is getting married in Houston tomorrow. So
lovely.
It's a good excuse to come back to Texas.
Is it on a pedal tavern?
As far as I know, we're on level ground. I will let y'all know if that changes.
It must be wedding season here in January because my ex-wife got married a few days ago. So there you go.
Oh, congrats.
Yeah. I don't know how to respond to that one. I don't know.
It was 10 years ago. People heal, move on. Hey, anybody who's in heartbreak right now or in a tough season, let me tell you, as a person who's walked through it, time heals all wounds. So it's all good. Sure. There's light on the other side. Happy for everybody.
Speaking of wounds, particularly those of the emotional variety that could be inflicted on an NBA player or an NBA fan, I was recently graciously added to a very fun text thread with our very own Derek Cameron and our buddy Prop. And here's my thing. In January, I've been doing, you know, I'm sticking pretty good. Like, I'm waking up very, very early in the mornings to start my day, which means I go to bed very early. Like elderly, like grandpa early. I'm talking 9:30. Okay.
Whoa.
Like, I've been, and I am, because I'm getting up at like 5:30 for January, like 5:36 in January, like pretty early, right?
Why?
I just wanted a January reboot. Like, I'm going to the gym in the mornings instead of the evenings, and I'm helping to coach my son's basketball team. So, like, my evenings are all jammed up. I just been pedal to the floor. But all I'd say is I wake up a lot of times to these discussions that it's like, well, it's too awkward for me to chime in now, but I make a mental note of this has to be unpacked publicly on a podcast. Cameron texted the three of us after what I'm presuming was following him getting thrown out like DJ Jazzy Jeff by Uncle Phil from.
I did not get thrown out.
But he said there was an incident at the Magic game tonight and it was worth it. And we beat the Celtics, which is impressive because the Celtics are, arguably the best team in the East. Maybe
they are
the NBA.
The number one team in the NBA right now. And they have 13 losses and three of them are to my Orlando Magic. Just FYI.
But I read it in that early morning haze as I'm like getting all my belongings for the day together. And I'm like, you know what? I don't even want to ask more right now. I want to ask Cameron publicly on the podcast what transpired the other night. Because Derek, from how you read it, like all I know is there was an incident that security got involved with.
Yeah,
in your mind, Derek, what played out? What is your interpretation of the messages that we received?
In my mind, having gone to a couple games with Cameron, in my mind, Cameron pushed the line and somebody from Boston was not having it. Now, here's the thing. Cameron has courtside seats. So the people that are there are, they've been eating good. They've absolutely been drinking good. Mm-hmm. And they're from Boston, more than likely. So, I mean,
okay, so here's what actually happened. Anytime the Magic play an East Coast team, anytime we play an East Coast team, New York, Boston, Philly, our arena is 2/3 their fans because nobody's from Orlando. They all move here from the Northeast. And so like when their team comes, they show out. I would if I lived in one of those cities. Good for them. But I hate it. And they're the worst fans because they're so vocal and they're so ornery. I hate losing to them.
Well, particularly, yeah. I would say Philly and Boston. Like
Boston is the worst. Philly is right there, but Boston is absolutely the worst. Okay, so I'm not courtside. I'm a floor seat, so I'm row two. That's an important factor in this story. I'm row two. Okay. So I'm surrounded by Celtics fans. The guy's directly in front of me, directly next to me, directly behind me. And I immediately walk up and I'm on edge. This is going to be a terrible night. Because, you know, they're the best team in the NBA and they're going to, it's just going to, I'm going to sit here and have to take it. Right. Okay. So the dude sits down in front of me and we're in folding chairs. And so I'm doing a visual here. It's a, you know, the back of a folding chair reclines, mm-hmm. right? It's at an angle. The dude has this big old jacket and he hangs it on the back of his chair.
So that's how this started.
We're tight. And so his jacket is laying in my lap. Right.
First of all, why does he have a big old jacket in Orlando?
It was chilly. It was chilly that night. Okay. Whatever. Chilly,
like okay. We're talking starter jacket style.
No. It was like a flannel, but super puffy flannel, whatever. It was just bulky, whatever. Okay.
So he hangs it. Shacket. We're talking bulky shacket here.
Bulky shacket. And it's in my lap. Okay. In my lap. Because it's like literally like it can't hang. It's like on my legs, right? On my knees.
Can I say this too? It's pretty tight.
Can I say this too? It's way more intimate to have someone shack it on your lap than like ski coat. The ski coat, the exterior is meant to just, you know, whip away water or
no
germs.
Problem.
Like it's that vinyl-y.
This is flannel. This is like, it's fabric.
It's like someone's personal bed comforter.
Yes. So
that,
like,
that has been absorbing
right at the
dirt.
Beginning of the game, when he does this, I'm like, hey buddy, like, look, you know, like you're in my lap. Could you put your jacket like on your side of your, oh, it's my chair. I'm like, yeah, it is your chair, but like, can you be considerate? You know what I mean? Like your jacket's literally on my legs, like bunched up in my lap. I mean, come on, man. And he's like, okay, fine. And he like, whatever. And he flipped it on the, which is what I would do. You put it on the front side of your back of your chair, right? You hang it that way. You lean against
you it. You sit on your jacket, right?
That's what I'm saying. Okay.
Right. You sit on your jacket.
So he did that first quarter. No problem. Uh-huh. Well, now the Magic are playing great the entire game. The entire game. As Derek knows, as Jesse knows, I'm very vocal. I'm not going to talk crap to the Boston Celtics because I fully expect that they're going to come back and beat us. Okay. Mm-hmm. I am just very loudly encouraging and cheering for my team and yelling at the refs. That's all I'm doing. Uh-huh. Okay. Well, by the fourth quarter, the Magic are clearly going to win. We were dominating the entire game. All the Boston fans are just angry. They're ornery. Okay. This dude in front of me in the fourth quarter decides he's going to stand up, change his jacket, and put it back the original way that he did it in the first quarter to go onto my lap.
This is you're talking A level passive aggressive.
Petty.
Yeah. The pettiest thing I've ever seen in my life. And I'm standing up, and so like I'm standing up yelling, whatever, and he's like trying to shove me back to like make room for his jacket. And I'm like, whoa, you know? And he's like, and you know, whatever. And he goes, it's my chair. I can do what I want with my chair. And I'm like, buddy, just be considerate. Your jacket is literally on my, in my space. Come on, man. And he's like, and then right then, because he was like, as you were saying, he had plenty of libations that night.
Uh-huh.
Security jumps right over and talks to him. And they were like, actually, it is his chair. You know, like it is his space. And I'm like showing security, like, this is just common decency. I don't want to have his jacket in my lap. And he's yelling to the security, I've had to sit here taking him in my ear all night. I can do what I want with my jacket. So he literally was doing it to be petty to get back at me because he couldn't say anything. Anyway, they told him, please, sir, just sit on your own jacket and like whatever. And so it was all resolved. But this is the first time in a couple of years I've had security come over. I mean, the last time it happened was because one of the other teams called security on me because I was messing with their coaches too much. But, you know, anyway, this is the first time I've had an incident with a fan. And of course, it's a Boston Celtics fan. So
I'm just malice in the palace. That's what I was looking for. That's what I was looking for.
I can see, yeah, because they have like this great Netflix documentary about Malice in the Palace, which was this infamous incident when a couple Ron Artest and some players ended up getting into like players got into altercations with a fan, and it's this great Netflix documentary.
Mm-hmm.
I'm waiting for this Netflix documentary, which is called Shack It, One Night in Orlando, and it's like, you know, I can see the cover image now. It's Cameron walking away with that guy Shack. jacket with his fists in the air. Like, I won and I'm taking it.
Absolutely. I got it. I'm walking out with it.
Imagine that starting a riot. The crazy part is riots have been started. Like, that literally, Malice in the Palace was started because I think someone threw a beer on Ron Artest.
No, they threw the beer after the fight broke out. So, like, the players were fighting and a fan threw a beer to, like, at him, and then they went into the stands. Yeah.
I'm like, imagine that happening over a jacket.
My thing is just like, do unto others as you have them do unto you. I'm not going to push my jacket onto the dude behind me. I'm going to be considerate of his space. This dude was doing it to be petty, and I had an issue with it. So
he just hated that they were losing.
That's exactly what it was. He was being petty.
I'm against hanging jackets on back of chairs in most situations anyway. But if you go to a restaurant, usually you can ask the person right up front, hey, do you kind of put this on a hanger or something? A lot of bars now have little coat hangers under the bar or under the high top table. There's no reason to hang. Yeah. And plus, it's all up in your shoulder blades. Every time you lean back, you're like, what is that? Oh, I got my jacket. I think we just need to end. I think just as a society, just determine if you're going to wear a jacket indoors, you know, if you're hustling from the car into a place that necessitates a jacket, you can find a better spot than the back of the chair. No one likes that. But
even if you have to use the back of your chair, you hang it on the front side of the chair and lean against your own jacket. That's it.
Not going to lie. I've never done that in my entire life. Oh. So not one time. So I think the fact that I'm 6'2". Probably no one really bothers me because he put his jacket wherever he wants. But now I'm going to be more considerate. I'm going to start sitting on my jacket.
I will walk a pretty absurd distance sans jacket if I know, just so I don't have to make, I'm talking even the grocery store. I'll be in the back of the lot and it'll be February, okay? And it's jamming and I've got to walk through a 30-degree parking lot with howling winds. I'd rather do it with a t-shirt than have to figure out the jacket situation once I get into the store. Because I don't want the jacket in the shopping cart.
I was up in New York over New Year's Eve because we don't have cold here in Florida. It was cold up there. And so everybody's wearing huge jackets, right? And so you go in, we were shopping, we were going in and out of stores. These stores have it like 85 degrees in there. I don't understand. What are you doing? I don't want to take my jacket off. I'm sweating within 2 minutes. So it's like, I have to carry this huge jacket or I have to sweat. Why don't they just drop the temperature of the stores knowing that everybody's wearing jackets? I don't get it.
It's I had the exact same experience. That's why I'd just rather be cold than have to manage.
So now we just need to invent the jacket bag.
Jesse, something else the jacket I bag. Carry. See, because I'm the same as Jesse, because I also would rather just, I mean, I wear sweatshirts a lot. So, and I just kind of like brave the 2 seconds that I'm outside. But as a woman, I already have to carry a purse because pockets are non-existent on women's clothing. And so I can't carry a purse and a coat bag, whatever it's called.
Put the purse in the jacket bag. It's the oversized jacket bag, and then you put your purse on top of the jacket inside of the jacket bag.
Here's another one too. Is because I've thought about this a lot, probably more mental energy into this than I should have. I think of a lot of places because coat checks are nice, but they're sort of a relic of the past. Here's what I'm thinking: every major establishment have cubbies. Okay, have a cubby system.
Theme parks do. They have like the lockers and
people love it. People love it. My wife's a preschool teacher.
I can't go to a 5-star restaurant and put my stuff in a cubby.
Why not? Why don't you just lay it on their nice table mat? Why don't you have your phone and your keys and all the, your junk just spread all over the table because you're too good for the cubby system?
So is there locks on the cubbies? Or are they wide open? There are at the theme parks.
Or you would have like a cubby guard. Someone who is paid to guard the cubbies, and there could be a number system.
That's
just a coat
check, girl. That's the same old, you went back to the 40s again.
It's an elementary school coat check.
Thank you. It's more of a preschool situation. It's a facial recognition. They're very good. Their job is to remember the faces. So there isn't, it's more personal than a coat check. And there's no tipping. We don't need another thing we have to feel weirdly obligated to tip on. Okay. Right. It is just an understood thing. As a society, we're carrying around more stuff. The climate is changing. We don't know when we're going to need jackets or not. Cubby systems, it would save people from fights like this. From literal altercations could be avoided with just elaborate cubby systems at every major establishment.
Wait, can I go back? Are we supposed to tip people at coat check? Is that a thing?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. Okay, to clarify, I've only ever used coat check. I've only ever used coat check once because I don't go to that many fancy places. So
coat check, if you drop your bag at a hotel and then pick it up later in the day, anytime somebody's getting something of yours, you have to hand them the ticket and a couple bucks or $5 or whatever.
In this economy?
Hey, they got to make a living too.
See, I'm probably paranoid because I don't leave my belongings anywhere.
I don't
anywhere
have cash on me. With,
what about a locker? Leave. What about a locker room situation, Derek?
Anywhere. Anywhere.
What do you do in a locker room? You just wear
a locker room?
Like,
I don't go to locker rooms. I wear what I'm going to wear at the gym. Yeah. I take it off and or do what I got to do. And then I take a shower when I get home.
Derek, here's the situation. You're going to the gym and it's 20 degrees raining out. You've got to have some outerwear. Are you working out in the outerwear? Are you working out like in a
poncho? I work out in my, I have sweatpants on.
Mm-hmm.
And a t-shirt, and I take my hoodie off.
And what do you do with it? Just carry it around?
Huh?
Tie it around the waist?
No, I just fold it up and put it in the corner somewhere and come back.
Okay.
So you're more comfortable just in a random dusty corner.
In my eyesight.
Than a locker with a lock on it.
In my eyesight. Yes. Okay. Yes. Because I don't want somebody to go into the locker and take my stuff. Because okay. I will have to beat the brakes off of them, and I don't want to do that.
Yeah. Well, I mean.
So that's me. But like I said, I am paranoid and I am a little different. So.
I think if I had the right cubby system with the right cubby guard, you'd be very open to my proposition.
You saying cubby guard makes me think of like a kindergartner. Like I assume it's just like the toughest kindergartner watching this.
Yeah, because no one's going to mess with them. They'd feel terrible about that, messing with some
But kid. What if I have something nice and the cubby guard takes it? Then what?
Well, I mean, you can't prevent that. You know, I'm not going to lie. There's some the interview process for cubby guards is pretty stringent though. they have to, my cubby guards have to take lie detector tests.
Yeah. It's background checks,
polygraphs. Yeah. Absolutely. Blood work.
So how much are you paying this cubby guard?
$200,000 a month. Yeah,
no question.
So how much?
$200,000 a month. That's a very important job.
I'll be a cubby guard for that.
Yeah, no joke. Let's go.
Good.
That's a pretty good deal.
I'll pitch it to the Magic. They could use a cubby guard system during the 3 days a year that were cold and people wear jackets to the games.
Solve a lot of problems. That's all I'm saying.
Yep. All right. Well, we have a great show in store for you today. Coming up later, we talk to Colony House, one of our favorite bands. We also have your feedback at the end of the show. And coming up next, it's Relevant Buzz. Stay tuned. Listening to Arlo Parks, song is Weightless.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, it's time for
Relevant Buzz.
All right, telling us what's happening this week at the intersection of faith and culture. It's Emily. What do you got this week?
All right, we have to start off talking about this viral story of a priest who shared his version of a true life story on TikTok. So back
true
in
death story.
True death story. You're right. So back in 2016, this priest says he had a heart attack and he died, temporarily went to hell. And while he was there, he just saw...
Wait. Why did the priest go to hell?
That's a red flag number one.
Red flag. I'm not going to say nothing about the priest, but you know.
I didn't think that's how it worked though. So anyway,
He does address that because I think he recognizes people would have questions about it.
Because he said in the piece, I read it because we wrote about this. He says, I thought I was a good person. Why am I in hell? So he's conscious of the fact that he shouldn't be there.
Right.
So he says he died, went to hell. What happened next?
Yeah. So while he's there, he's, you know, walking around, seeing what's going on and just witnessing some insane moments of like torture and pain. There are demons enslaving humans. There's a man he kind of describes as like a hellhound walking around on all fours, like a dog being burned from head to toe. Just absolute torture, just kind of the worst things you can imagine. But the truly worst thing he saw is there's a section of hell where music is played. But it's not just any music. He says he could specifically hear Rihanna's Umbrella and Bobby McFerrin's Don't Worry, Be Happy being used for torture. But it wasn't like the original version of the song. It's a group of demons performing them, their rendition
badly
for torture.
Yeah, to like torture people with a bad rendition of Umbrella and Don't Worry, Be Happy.
I have so many questions.
I know.
I'd be real shocked quick, if you
Emily,
didn't.
Did he address why he think he ended up in hell, not heaven, during this near-death experience?
He said that he thinks it was because God did speak to him. He did address this. God spoke to me. He said, "You were secretly angry with people who harmed you. You hoped I would punish them. These are not your people. These are my people. I just want you to focus on the task I give you." So it was basically just like he was harboring a lot of hatred.
Yeah, little wake up call. Nothing.
It's basically a lie. Yeah. It's basically a lie for clout.
I mean, he had a vivid dream. He thinks he actually died, went to hell, and heard Rihanna.
Hey, look.
Hey, I'm just impressed that the demons are staying that up on the charts. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like they're playing 2016 music in 2016.
Listen, y'all. Umbrella's I'm not gonna lie.
10 years ago, right?
Yeah.
This is eerily similar to a story I just sent you. And I remember this from like 3 years ago. And I think I died laughing at this because this woman said she died and went to hell. She saw the demons tormenting Michael Jackson and making him moonwalk around hell as a punishment.
Hey, Satan was the angel of music and worship, right?
Yeah,
right.
But
there's a heavy music influence down there. I get it.
You guys remember like those old like Frank Peretti books, or just like the evangelical notion of like spiritual warfare, or like you know these demons that are like hiding in these invisible shadows, and they're just you know ready to engage in this sort of you know battle of good and evil, you know, through prayer and stuff. How'd you like to be one of those demons? And Satan's like, my legions, we will tear down the kingdom of God. But you got to sing Don't Worry, Be Happy down in the pit for a while. We got a bunch of people coming in that we're harboring some hate. We need to flush that out. I think we fire up Umbrella. But let's do it in a weird key, kind of off time.
Yeah.
This is a torture.
It is interesting that there's now two stories of like pop music
pop
being
stars.
Used as torture.
So what happened in the 1200s? Is it like a lute player was down there like doing bad lute music or something? Yeah.
why is that why aren't they torturing with their own music? Like,
right.
You know, what's up with them paying attention to the contemporary hits? Like, isn't that like an eternal place? They just happen to be like, let's just roll the pop American songbook back for about 15 years and find a couple highlights here.
Apple Music down.
This is what happens when you take the I don't like secular music thing too far. Mm. You're on the brink of death and you're just like, man, I hate that I listened to Michael Jackson 10 years ago. He has to be in hell. It's like, guys, look.
Yeah.
I've never been to hell before, so I might get there and they might be playing, you know, my latest record. So, sorry, guys. I apologize. I hate that.
The Lake of Fire. It is fire, man. They got the new Rihanna jam. Hey, you guys here? Rihanna's giving a first look at her new single. It's premiering tonight in hell. They're going to premiere it there. Then they're going to bring it on up to the.
I just see how it plays. Umbrella.
They're
going to
see how it plays in hell.
We're going to get in trouble for this one. For sure.
I've just decided. I don't care about getting in trouble anymore.
This is definitely going to get some emails, Cameron. Just
it's
be ready right. for that.
Hey, it's not, I didn't go to hell. It's what this dude saw.
We battle not against flesh and blood, but principalities of bad Rihanna covers. We all know that, guys.
Maybe it's the earworm thing of the Bobby McFerrin. You know what I mean? Like it gets caught in your head and it's like torture. You know what I mean? Do, 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 and like for eternity, that's just on loop.
Do you think it's maybe like the Do y'all remember the fish that you could buy that would sing that song?
The Bubba.
Yo!
The bass. Yeah, my uncle had it.
Pull me in the river. Yeah, it was great. No, it was hilarious too. Like whenever you see one of those old Bubba bass like start dancing because they kind of like fold up. I mean, it was really just they fold up and the mouth moves. It was hilarious every time. Like, Jay, now the bass is singing. Put me in the river. That's pretty good.
That's pretty good peak technology. I think we really should have stopped there.
Yeah, that's where the robot innovation should have stopped. You know what I mean? Like right there. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
What else?
Well, speaking of technological advances, I know we've talked a lot about ChatGPT, but we're bringing it up again because a group of researchers put it to the test, and it has now passed an MBA exam, the bar exam, and a medical exam. So it is like just very advanced technology, which is just crazy that it is has grown in so much in like just a short amount of time.
Can I don't mean to like, because I saw this going around too, you know, this story. And I don't mean to be like the wet blanket here, but from my understanding of how ChatGPT works, like, It's like scanning the internet in real time, like finding stuff. It's like, well, yeah, I could pass the bar too if I had the internet like at my disposal, just type in the questions. Like,
but a lot of those exams are essays where you have to apply logic and solve problems and say, here's a scenario, what would happen? And like, it's writing original content. It's not just regurgitating existing data.
Yeah, it's not like
data.
A multiple choice thing.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's thinking it through and problem solving.
But the other thing I saw too is that the CNET story of, you know, CNET was fired a bunch of writers using ChatGPT to write content for the, it's a tech review site, right? And not only was there factual errors throughout, but some writers were like, no, this is straight up plagiarism. All ChatGPT was awesome. Find my article about the iPhone 14, and it changed words but not sentence structures so that it could avert plagiarism. But all it did was copy and paste, but found synonyms for some words. And to me, it's like, is it really thinking, or is it just an advanced program that's trying to cobble together other human thought in a way? Like, is it actually producing its own thought, or is it just stringing together human thought that it's been programmed to go hunt down, you know?
You need to spend some time with it, because I can tell you for a fact it's coming up with original content. Like we asked it to write a worship song the other day, and it wrote an amazing worship song that had nothing to do with any worship songs that exist. I asked it to pitch me 10 article ideas for Relevant Magazine, and it pitched 10 perfect article ideas that we've never run before. But like it's coming up with original stuff. It's assessing what's happened and then applying logic to what could be. So it is not just regurgitating like a database search.
Yeah.
Maybe in those situations that you said it did, but I'm saying I've seen it do original content that's jarring. We play with it every day. Literally every day I play with it.
Yeah.
So, but did you see, so one of the major concerns is in the education sector. Obviously we've talked about this. It's gone around kids and having it write papers for students, essays, stuff like that. Did you see this week? We reported on this. The founder, the guy behind ChatGPT, addressed the education concerns finally. And he said, I don't care. he said, education adapted to the calculator.
Yeah. Or the abacus.
He said, after the calculator, we taught differently. You know, we taught math differently after the calculator. We don't have to like stay in the 1800s with our math calculations. So we adapted to innovation. He said, so educators, change how you're testing your students. Change what you're asking them to do. Now that this tool is here for them, like the calculator is, apply their human ability to other things in education. And I'm like going, you know, like in the current, it's like, that's scary and weird and like foreign to us. But he's living 50 years down the road, and he's viewing before ChatGPT like the abacus versus the calculator. He's like,
I don't even think he's 50 years down the road. I think he's right now. And I think that education is 50 years behind. There,
yeah.
Like,
but I'm saying he's living in a reality where like, use it as a tool. Don't stay in the dark ages. Like, let's go together. You know what I mean? And I'm like, I can't say that he's wrong. Well,
teach cursive anymore because it's a waste of time, because we have what used to be cursive was just a quick way to write. So you can hand someone, we have text messaging. We don't need cursive. My kids don't even have spelling tests anymore. Why? Because they're never going to be in a situation that they don't have a device telling them how to spell a word they don't know how to spell. Like, they don't have to commit to memory all the random rules of the English language and how they've evolved over time in nonsensical ways. They don't have to commit that stuff to memory. They can use that memory and that mental power for something that's more useful, because we do have access to devices all the time that solve a thousand little problems that the education system used to be very concerned with, you know?
Hey, I got a great idea. Let's teach the kids tax code.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's teach them
investing.
Let's teach them tax code.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
please make sure
the tax code.
All the kids know the difference between there, and there, because
your
phone don't know, you know. So
yeah,
like,
for sure.
Yeah, but that's it. That's the only, the spelling test is there, and there every year. That's all you need.
Let's teach the kids how to use the internet to research without plagiarizing, right? Yeah. Like, let's teach those types of things, because that's the, we're not going backwards. Like, the internet's not going to be less relevant in our lives in the future, barring something cataclysmic. So let's teach them how to use the resources that they have to live a prosperous life.
Yeah.
So I agree with the ChatGPT guy. Like, yeah, let's find out how to use this to make them some money.
I think, like, a good argument that, like, to kind of be sort of devil's advocate here is, like, yes, it's great to use technology and it can solve all these little problems. But I'm, like, on a bigger scale, like, if we just teach kids how to use the internet, are they going to ever think originally for themselves? Are they going to be able to know how to apply logic? It's that whole idea of, like, you know, if you give a man a fish, lead for a day, if you teach him, he'll never go hungry again. And it's like, if we just teach kids, like, how to Google everything, they're going to have to Google how to do this every time versus actually just teaching them how to do it themselves. I think there has to be a balance. I don't know what it looks like, but
sure.
I see both sides of the argument where, yes, we need to embrace this, but I don't think we can just say, like, yeah, let's fully go for it. Because even like the argument of a calculator, yeah, I can use a calculator, but say my phone's dead and I have to multiply something. If I don't know how to multiply, you know, like, just, you know, like, again, this is such a, it might not happen, but it's like, you, I think you still need to teach it.
I think we teach the foundations, right? We teach the foundational things, but I think as information progresses, we have to progress to understand that things are different. Like, I think the cursive example is a prime example. We just don't communicate with cursive anymore. We just don't. Yeah. So I don't think I don't know about not having spelling tests. I think we should know how to spell.
I agree. I think what, Emily, I think you're right. Like, teach the foundations, but how do you, I think the guy's point is evaluate their knowledge differently. Don't have them just regurgitate an essay or a book report or whatever, you know, like mindless, like rephrasing of information, like evaluate their knowledge in other ways, you know, because ChatGPT is going to be able to fake that. So figure out another way to teach them and then see what they've learned, you know? And so it's going to evolve education. So
it may make education fun. Like, imagine if it's like, hey, okay, devices down. Now tell me about this topic, right? I don't care how you found the information. If you use ChatGPT, if you used a book, if you use whatever, I just want to know that you understand
right
now what we're talking about. Like, I think that will be more beneficial. Like, I hate, like, my kids, no lie, I had a 9-11 year old, my 10-year-old, he's 11, he was struggling last year. And the reason he was struggling is because he really clams up in test taking, right? With the little circle bubbles and all of those different things. But if you ask him about the information, he can tell you everything that he needs to know. And I'm like, why are we testing kids with these archaic ways of you know, processing information? Why can't we say, hey, okay, well, if you can take a test written, great. If you're not good at that, hey, talk to me about the information that you know. Because the only thing that matters is, do you know the information, not do you learn in a certain format? So I'm like, yeah, let's disrupt the system.
And even, like, to a degree, it's like, what, like, really great pastors or Bible teachers do is they bridge knowledge and wisdom, right? Like, here are facts, here is theology, but here's wisdom. Here's how you apply it and actually make an impact in your community and your life. I feel like it's got to be the same approach with education. If you're just throwing facts to memorization, but don't know how to apply them in any way, or not, you know, finding ways that different people, you know, process information, you're really doing a disservice, whether it's in a church setting mm-hmm. or an education setting, because knowledge will only take you so far. It's not until you have like that wisdom of how to apply it, or to Derek's point, actually explain it, not just be good at taking a test, that is going to give you any kind of upper hand.
I mean, they talked about, I mean, there's a disruption in standardized testing right now. I mean, schools are not even accepting the SAT or ACT anymore because there's an implicit bias in it. It doesn't actually accurately represent what students know. And so it's like standardized testing is getting kind of to be seen as in, you know, not a great way. Maybe essays are not going to be a great way. And I like the idea that education is going to have to adapt and evolve. So good. Mm-hmm. Good for ChatGPT messing up everything. All right. What is the last thing you got, Emily?
Really quickly, we just want to highlight that The National announced that they're going to be releasing a new album this spring. And they're working with Sufjan Stevens, Taylor Swift, and Phoebe Bridgers. So I personally think it's going to be a fantastic album. Of course, I'm biased. I've spoken numerous times about my love for Taylor Swift. So anything she's on, automatically gold for me.
What's the name of this band?
The National.
It's called The National.
It's like a indie dad rock band. I mean,
that's
like,
a great way to do it.
You know what I mean?
Indie like, dad rock.
Phoebe
Bridgers is dope. I like her.
Yeah.
She is dope.
And you'd like The National too.
And The National's collaborated with Taylor Swift before what was the album, two albums ago? Evermore.
Folklore
was
that and Evermore.
It? Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Erin Dresser did. But yeah, so good their vibes. New album, First Two Pages of Frankenstein, will drop later this spring, but they did actually release their first single, Tropic Morning News, and here it is right now. I was so distracted then, I didn't have it straight in my head, I didn't have my face on yet, or the role or the feel of where I was going with it all. I was suffering more than I let on, the Tropic Morning News was on, there's nothing.
Dad rock.
Yeah, Brooklyn dad
guys,
rock. Brooklyn
dad rock. I'm just, yeah. I hate to be that guy.
Be it.
All the time, but I'm going to be it. I love how white people just name their albums whatever they want to. First Two Pages of Frankenstein, man, what in the world? Like, I'm like, I don't even, what is this album about? Like, bro, like, I promise sometimes, like, I listen to some of these indie bands and the names are, and I love indie music. You know, yeah. Cameron, I'm a music. I love all of it. But I'm just like, dog, where did you, was you high? Were you
yes,
racist?
They
like,
probably
they had to
were.
Be high.
Yes.
Right? And somebody was like, man, let's just break this Frankenstein out. Man, this Frankenstein is gnarly. We'll just name our album First Two Pages of Frankenstein. That's a crazy name, bro, for real. Like, I love
First Two Pages of Frankenstein, indie rock band or firework?
Firework.
It is true, Dick. You can just, someone has to have like an indie rock album name generator out there on the internet that just finds, it was like, I was thinking about this too with like podcasts, you know, like, you could, if you had any just idiom, right? Like any like turn of phrase that people use, you know, you could make it into like a talk show. Here's the thing. Well, that's what I was thinking. You know what I mean? Like any idiom will literally, you can turn it into like an NPR podcast name.
I just sent y'all a link to the Lana Del Rey song title generator. It's pretty great. It's exactly what Derek's talking about. I mean, it's like they all sound like real songs.
When I'm done with my album, I got two albums I need to finish up. When I'm done with that, I'm just going to make music and I don't care what the name of the song is, like what the concept is. I'm just going to look around my room and just name it whatever, the first thing that I see. And then I'm just going to see how that works and just see.
And it's going to go platinum.
Seriously. Hey,
I bet you it will.
Click that link and hit new song. These are great. Croissant
Soiree. All right,
man,
I'm about to do it right now. Whiskey Cast. Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Keep hitting new song. This is great. Money
Kerouac
Pharmacy.
Appleseed. Oh, yes. Yale Heroin. Absolutely. Doritos Ball Gag. For
Macaron,
sure.
Macaron Magnolia.
Diamond Rapture.
This is great.
Yosemite Boudador. I don't even know what a Boudador is, but sign me up.
Boudoir.
Rich Carlton DeBuante. Yes.
Hampton's Melodrama. I would listen to that. That's a banger.
Cape Cod Divorcee. That sounds like a good one.
Upper East Side Murder, hydroponic heroin, Vogue, Appleseed, Ragtime, Bad Kisses. Absolutely. Sign me up for all of this.
That's great. All right, National. We like them.
Real quick, I went to a list of just like common English idioms, you know. Tell me, how is there not a weather podcast called A Perfect Storm? Or a fantasy basketball called Insult to Injury? Or like a weather podcast called Break the Ice? I'm telling you, just find a list of idioms and reverse engineer a podcast that you can pitch to a network. That's all you have to do. Because all of them, that is their formula. On this episode of Spill the Beans, we talk with Chef So-and-so So-and-so about his new pinto bean recipe. That's up next on NPR.
That's great. All right. That'll do it for Relevant Buzz. Make sure to check out relevantmagazine.com. Every day, we're covering the intersection of faith, life, culture, and more. And follow us on all the socials. All right. Thanks, Emily. Stay tuned. Up next, Colony House joins us. Listening to Ginge. The song is Take My Picture.
Well, today's show is brought to you in part by Crown College, a boldly Christian and academically excellent college providing a lifelong, authentic community. Crown offers on-campus, online, and graduate programs, 18 NCAA Division III sports, international service opportunities, and a vibrant student life. Discover why Crown College is ranked top 3 in America for online Christian education. Visit crown.edu today.
Well, our guest today is Caleb Chapman from Colony House. The band is getting ready to release their album, The Cannonballers, and head out on tour this year. He sat down with Emily to discuss the band's new music, how they bring positivity and intentionality into everything they do, and what they're looking forward to on tour. Here's our conversation with Colony House.
Here to talk about your new album that is coming out, The Cannonballers. How do you feel about it, about to come out?
Putting out music is so funny because you spend so much time and energy in the studio creating this thing, and you're mad and you're happy, and you go through all the emotions that creating something kind of involves, and then you sit on it for like a year. And then by the time you put it out, you're like, well, I guess we'll see. That's kind of how it always feels. I guess we'll see. And then I'm sure in about, you know, 6 months, we'll be back doing this whole thing again. But we are really excited about, you know, this step in the Colony House world, the fourth album. I don't know. It's just cool that we get to keep putting out music. We're just grateful for that, you know.
How much of your faith like plays a role in your music?
Our music is observational. You know, it's about what's happening in our lives. It's about our friends, our families, our marriages, our kids. And all of that is interwoven together with our beliefs and how we're walking through that. I don't specifically write like, you know, if anything, I'm always asking myself the question of like, do I need to be more purposeful about what I'm thinking and writing about? And then I ask myself the question that I brought up not too long ago of like, how much of that is influenced by the way, not the way I was raised necessarily, but the culture I grew up in of needing to filter things through a certain lens. I'm kind of being abstract here. I should answer it more directly, but it's a part of my faith is a part of everything in my life. So I'd have to say, of course, it's part of the music. But there was a certain point where we felt like we had to stop defining ourselves as a Christian act or a not Christian act. It was kind of like, I don't think, I don't think it matters. Maybe it does to people. For us, we're just hopefully, you know, the Colony House mission statement is the door is always open. This Colony House door is always open. Come on in, you know? So that's not, I guess that's faith influenced, but it's also not. It's just a general way we like to live our lives and operate as a hospitable people, or trying to be hospitable people. Good baby.
It's interesting, like, just to hear you say that you're continuing to, like, push out, because I feel like a lot of people, it's like they almost try to, like, hone in on their sound and, like, hone in on, like, here's who we are. And I like that y'all are, like, you know who you are, but you're also still exploring what all that can be.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I think that's it. People will be like, man, it's cool to... It's funny, like, people want an eclectic listen, or like want you to be like, there's no, man, they can do it all, there's no boundaries. But then, you know, there's the critical people out there that are like, it's all over the map. And you got these voices in your head as a creative who's going, well, should we find the thing, and should we stick to that? As like from a marketing perspective, that's probably easier to attach someone. And then your heart is going, I just want to keep trying things. That's what keeps me fulfilled. That's what keeps me coming back to this. And so I guess it's a dance. You know, you want people to be able to put their finger on, like, what is Colony House? Well, I guess they're kind of this. And we tried to hone in on that. But at the same time, we'll always try to throw you curveballs, you know, and that's for us, you know, to keep it fun and explorative, you know.
As you get back on the tour, like, are you going in with, like, a different mindset now that you've had, like, this year of rest?
I think I don't know how much this is pandemic influenced or just growing up and being in our 30s now and having kids and wives and all that, you know, you just get a little more intentional about how, like, when you're going to be gone, what you're going to be gone for, what you say yes and what you say no to. So, you know, this tour is, I think, 35 dates, and that's the shortest headline tour we've ever done, I think. Our last one, the tour, which shall not be named, that tour was 45 dates, and which is kind of a normal Colony House tour. And it beat us up. Like, look, about show 30, you look around and you're like, oh my gosh, how are we going to ask these people to do this 15 more times? You know, and you start, I don't know. We just want to, I think, pace ourselves better. And it's no new wisdom, like the power of no. Everyone has kind of heard these talks of like, hey, you don't have to say yes to everything. You can say no. And when you learn to be comfortable with that, you actually start defining lines for yourself, and you actually will be more productive, and things will be more fruitful when you kind of get choosier. If you're, you know, if it's indeed out of like wanting to be diligent and not wanting to do something. So I'd say, yeah, we're just trying to be more intentional in this season of like, yeah, valuing the time both at home and on the road. And we'll be back before you know. You know.
That was Colony House. Make sure to check out their new album, The Cannonballers, when it comes out, and catch them on tour this year. They're great. All right, stay tuned. Up next, it's your feedback. You're listening to Hemlock Springs. The song is Stranger Danger.
Well, Relevant has a lot happening this year, and we don't want you to miss a thing. Make sure to sign up for our newsletter right there on the front page at relevantmagazine.com, and we'll send you our top five trending stories into your inbox every weekday. We'll also send you a weekly podcast newsletter with the latest episodes, some fan extras, and first peeks at the new shows that we're going to be rolling out throughout this year. Make sure to sign up. It's the best way to keep in touch with everything we got going on.
Okay, it's time for your feedback. All right, well, last week, I don't even know how we came up. You guys got to help me here. How did we ask this question?
This is a Jesse thing.
Okay, the question last week was, come up with a hilariously ridiculous reality show for Netflix and pick a celebrity to host
that's
it.
Right.
It was the Rob Lowe Ghost Hunters. That's it. So you guys hit us up on Twitter at Relevant Podcast, and here's a few of our favorite pitches.
I want to start off with Ike Gordon's suggestion. Hell's Kitchen with Gordon Ramsay spinoff called Jail's Kitchen. Gordon Ramsay hosts a cooking competition with prisoners only using the food available at the prison. Winner gets a get out of jail free card.
Wow. There's some motivation there.
Yeah. That would be an intense competition. But also, I mean, I've never had prison food, but I have not heard great things about it. So I'd love to see some, you know, nice creations as they come up with.
Yeah, I'm out. Have Derek, Shaylee James says, have Derek host a cooking show where he just stacks nachos the whole time and gives the audience all jalapeno suits. So, I don't know how many seasons of that we will get, but I'm with it. I'll do it.
Ben said, normal people, every week we join host Donald Glover as everyday people are picked to do completely impossible task trained by a mentor. Week one, Eminem teaches a grandma to rap. Week two, JJ Watt teaches an out of shape dad to pass rush. Better idea.
That's amazing.
Take out the,
I actually like that.
I mean, it does sound like good, but here's a better idea. Take out the mentor and just thrust them into a situation where they have to be proficient in that skill.
I want to see the behind the scenes of them figuring out how to do it with the mentor. Come on. Let the grandma have Eminem coach her. You don't want to just throw her out there.
Just throw her up on stage. Just bring her up and have someone battle her.
No, don't do that.
I'd rather watch.
Don't do that. What if it's your grandmother?
I'd rather watch some dad just get blown up by a linebacker. That would be much more hilarious than him actually doing like a swing move or something.
Brendan Spencer, I like his idea. It's called Swipe Out. It's an obstacle course themed dating show hosted by Jamie Foxx, where contestants sourced from real world dating apps must compete challenging courses to secure their match. And it's like American Ninja Warrior meets Finding a Date. So again, I like the name Swipe Out. I think that's very clever, and I'd watch the show.
Real talk, these are good ideas.
Yeah, I know. I mean, even the joke one, JJ Carlson, Jeopardy hosted by Will Ferrell as Alex Trebek or Daryl Hammond as Sean Connery. I'd watch that all day long. It's a real Jeopardy with a funny host. Come on. Anyway.
Jason has a great one. He says, America's Worst Auto Mechanics, hosted by Liam Neeson. And he says, every episode begins with him saying, they lack a particular set of skills that may make them a nightmare for people like you. I love it. I think that is amazing because I'm not necessarily convinced that a lot of auto mechanics know what they're doing in the first place. So I think it's great. This is almost like a documentary, to be honest.
It's like my idea for a show called Unpimp My Ride, where they just take a normal, pretty good looking vehicle and try to make it just look ridiculous by the end of the show.
It's just mutilated.
Yeah. Like, I'd rather watch that probably than one where they make it look cool. Like, I'd be more entertained by them just throwing like giant fins on the back, like welding fins onto like a Tesla or something. Like, I would be more entertained by that.
That's funny. All right. Well, there's more where that came from. Check it out on Twitter. Okay. For this week's
editorial question of the week. Hey.
All right. Well, earlier, Emily brought the buzz item about the priest who died and went to hell and experienced a music room where they deem a band of demons badly played covers of Bobby McFerrin and Rihanna. You got us thinking, what would your version of hell be? So we want to know what if you know, as you envision hell, what do you think is going on there that would be particularly torturous? Maybe leave the actual torture out. Let's make it funny. All right. Hit us up on Twitter at Relevant Podcast and tell us what your version of this priest hell would
for be. For me, it's a Property Brothers marathon, just on a loop. Maybe I would get there.
Wait, the demons reenacting the Property Brothers?
Yes, but the Property Brothers are definitely there. Like, not surprised to find you gentlemen here. But yeah, they're reenacting classic episodes of Property Brothers. To me, that would be the worst.
Reenacting the actual episodes.
Yes.
Oh my
gosh. It's like demon theater, but instead of doing actual theater, they're just reenacting somewhat popular episodes of Property Brothers. Remember, this is the kitchen where they botched the butcher block countertop. Yeah.
You can't look away. They've like rigged your eyes.
Yeah. It's Clockwork Orange. Your eyelids. I gotta watch them install this duvet again or bidet again.
Oh yeah. Man, that's funny. All right, hit us up on Twitter at Relevant Podcast and we'll read our favorites next week. Well, before we wrap things up, I want to thank Caleb Chapman from Colony House for joining us today. Make sure to check out The Cannonballers when the album drops next Friday. Also, make sure to check out relevantmagazine.com. We're posting a bunch of stuff there every day, all day. And follow us on all the socials so you don't miss a thing. If you want just the best of the best, make sure to sign up for our daily newsletter right there on the front page of the website and on the sidebars of all the articles. You can get our top 5 trending stories sent to your inbox every weekday. Hey, and if you like the show, if you're still listening, maybe you do, tell people about it. Rate it, review it wherever you listen. Share it on social. Tell people about it. Get word out. Appreciate it. All right. On that note, we'll wrap it up. I'm Cameron Strang.
I'm Jesse Carey.
I'm Derek Miner.
I'm Emily Brown.
We will see you on Tuesday. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the Relevant Podcast. Check out our features, interviews, and news updates every day at relevantmagazine.com. And make sure to follow Relevant on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for the latest. For more great podcasts, browse the shows on the Relevant Podcast Network, which you can find at our site. And while you're there, don't miss the all-new era of Relevant Magazine. A new issue releases every other month at relevantmagazine.com.
My cubby guards have to take lie detector tests.
Relevant Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.